Welcome to Steppin' Out, the 12-step meeting on the air. Tonight you'll meet real people with true stories of addiction and recovery. And now, Steppin' Out.
Hello and welcome to America's 12-step radio show. My name is Drew and this is Steppin' Out. The stories you're about to hear are real. It's a 12-step meeting on the air, so kick back, grab a cup of coffee and listen in. If you ever wonder what went on inside of those things, you're going to find out right this minute. We have a very unique situation. We have a father and son team here. The father is from Gamblers Anonymous, and the son is from Gammonon. And first up, I give you Jeff. Jeff, tell us a little about, Jeff being the father, that is, and tell us a little bit about what it was like as an active gambler. And we're going to hear from your son a little later about what it was like from his perspective, but why don't you give us your story first?
Okay. Do you want me to start from the beginning?
Start from the beginning.
Okay. Well, my mother was an alcoholic.
Okay.
My father was a compulsive gambler.
Mm-hmm.
My mother died when I was 10.
All right.
Really nobody to take care of me except my father. So, you know, I came home from school. There was nobody there. You know, on the weekends I would spend with my father, who was a cab driver.
Okay.
We never really picked up passengers. We spent both days going to the racetrack.
Oh, okay.
At an early age, where people learned reading and writing, you know, my father's main thing was to teach me the racing form.
Sorry, so you're handicapped in horses when you should be in school. How old were you at this time?
10, going on 11.
Okay.
I remember asking my dad, you know, could I have a hot dog or a hamburger or a soda? And he'd always say, yeah, after the next race, no problem. Of course, after the next race, because he never won the race before, there was never enough money, you know, and the money had to go to the next race.
Right.
So it was always after the next race.
Sure, sure. Time, you know.
Never got the hot dog or the soda by the time we left. I guess from there, my gambling started. You know, throughout my life, I've gambled on everything. You know, I've been gambling on horses. I've gambled at the casinos. I've gambled with bookies heavy.
Mm.
I guess at the age of 18, when I was legal to get into the racetracks, I used to go to the racetracks.
You did.
All my life, you know, I've gambled. I married, had two children, didn't gamble as much then, but then started. Throughout my married life, I started to gamble. And then I guess, you know, well, I knew my wife found out about my gambling.
What kind of gamble are we talking about? Just horses? I mean, was it...
No, at the time I was... each time I became very heavy in a different form of gambling.
All right. Well, let's start with the progression. It started with the horses,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, it started with the horses. Well, it started with cards, maybe.
Oh, it started with cards? Okay.
Yeah, right.
And then cards to horses.
Cards to horses.
And then where does
horses,
it go from there?
Basically to... sports betting.
Okay, sports betting.
So I started betting heavy with the bookies.
Okay, football?
Football, baseball, basketball,
okay.
Hockey, everything there was. Gambled on sports and games, you know, I knew nothing about.
Oh, really? Okay. Didn't matter?
Didn't matter.
Okay.
College basketball, if there were 20 games on a Saturday, I'd bet, 20 games.
Well, what was the attraction? I mean, was it...
I think it was the rush.
Yeah.
The rush of gambling. Winning didn't make any difference because the more you won, you just wanted to gamble more.
Interesting.
And when you lost, you know, you always wanted to fight to, you know, gain back the money you lost.
Right, right.
It was just the rush of gambling.
What was the first big hit you had? What was the first big win that you remember? What was the first big loss that you remember?
Well, the first big hit, I think, was, I remember betting, sports betting, and I think if there were 20 games on a Saturday, I think I hit 18 out of 20.
Wow.
So,
what was that worth?
Oh, I'd say that had to be worth about $10,000.
$10,000. How long did you have it in your pocket for?
For maybe 2 days, 3 days.
Where'd you go with it?
Nowhere. It stayed in my pocket.
Okay. And it was gone, huh?
It went gone. Yeah, you're right.
What was the biggest loss?
The biggest loss at the time, I don't really remember, but it had to be probably around maybe $10,000, $15,000 or so.
How old were you then?
At that time, you know, I was betting heavy. I was probably in my, late 20s.
What were you earning? What kind of money was, I don't know what you did, but, well, you know, what was this in relationship to your earnings?
Well, I wasn't earning very much. You know, I was earning maybe around $25,000
So that's
a
half a year's salary.
Oh, yeah.
Okay,
right,
so that's a lot of money to you. Yeah. I mean, all right. I just wanted to get a sense of perspective.
There was always a way to get money. I don't really remember how, but, you know, there was always, a way to get money. I wasn't into the bookies because I was always paying them off. But my ex-wife at the time was working, too, so she had an income. And like most gamblers' wives, before everything hits the fan, the gambler has control of the money.
What did she know at the time?
Oh, nothing.
Did she not want to know, or did she?
No, I just think she didn't know. Maybe she knew in the back of her head, but not really, because I would take care of all the bills and I would take care of everything coming in, and I would make sure any of the credit cards, that came in, the credit bills, she wouldn't see. And because I always paid Peter to pay Paul, you would gain more credit, you know. And at the time, the banks would, want you to know if you wanted to sign for checks or, you'd get a $10,000 check. You could pay it back on a loan, So it was always a matter of, borrowing from Peter to pay Paul.
Right.
And she was a teacher, so she was making decent money. And, things weren't as high then. So I never borrowed from anybody, I was always able to, as I said, borrow from Peter to pay Paul.
Okay.
Or borrow from a loan shark and, pay them back.
That didn't cause any, were you ever really upside down with those guys, or did you want
to? No. I was always upfront with them, and, some of them were people that I knew from work.
Okay.
Or people who I was introduced to.
Okay.
So, I was always able to pay them, pay them back.
Right.
Again, I was always borrowing from Peter to pay Paul, and when there was nothing there, all of a sudden in the mail came a chance to sign for another credit card or sign for a bank check that the credit card was giving out.
So it's just the shell game. You're just moving it around.
Just a shell game, moving it around.
And you always
hoping
had...
Hoping for the big win again. That was never there.
And did you, but how often would you hit for big money like that?
Well, at one point, I think it was in January, I remember that I was betting sports. And I had a deal with the bookie, and on a Tuesday you had to get paid or pay him. And I would, if I got paid, he would blow the horn outside my office window, and I would go down, and he would give me the money on a Tuesday.
Mm-hmm.
And if I had to pay him, then I would meet him at a diner in a nearby town in New Jersey, and I would pay him. So I think at one point I hit... From January to April, I think it was about $50,000.
Wow.
I had hit. And I think from April till about a month later, I had lost the $50,000 plus some.
Unbelievable.
So it was a great rush while I was winning, and a great downer while I was losing,
Wow.
And as time progressed there, my wife finally had found out that I was gambling.
Okay.
And the marriage just didn't seem to work out.
Okay.
My wife wasn't too aware at the time. Then she found
she
out.
Figured it out.
Then everything hit the fan.
All right.
My wife had called up Gamblers Anonymous. This is the first time I was in. I've been in twice.
Okay.
The first time when I went into Gamblers Anonymous, I really didn't take it serious. She did, and I didn't.
Okay.
And we went for a while, and then things didn't work out between us. We separated, and I had moved out of the house. I stopped going to that program because I really didn't want to go to it.
Mm.
And we finally divorced. This was like around 17, 18 years ago.
Okay.
At the time, my children were growing up, and I was really focused on them. Even though I was gambling all along, I wasn't gambling very heavy.
Okay.
Because I knew I had certain responsibilities with them. back in 2001, I had moved close to Atlantic City. The children were, my son and daughter were
was that to gamble more, or was there?
Well, no, I had moved because I things weren't going too bad. I wasn't gambling that much.
Okay.
I was gambling, but really very little. But being near Atlantic City, I started going to Atlantic City. Just things progressed. I used to play everything in Atlantic City also. I'd play the slot machines. I'd play blackjack. I'd get comps in Atlantic City. Of course, Atlantic City is great for that. You know,
what are comps?
Giving comps are when they give you free rooms.
Oh, free stuff, yeah.
And free food and invite you down to the shows and this and that. And, you know, you think you got to play more because you have to... make sure that they give you more comps, you know. I started getting into what's very popular right now is high-stakes poker games.
Okay.
In Atlantic City.
What kind of stakes are we talking?
Well, you know, as a gambler and wanting the rush, you know, I first started playing what they called 1-5, which is $1 to $5.
Okay.
But that wasn't enough because you couldn't win enough money. You know, then I went to 10, 15, you know, and that wasn't enough money. Finally, I was playing anywhere from $50 to $100 in $50 to $100 games.
Wow. You know?
which were high, but no luck at all. Absolutely no luck in Atlantic City. I think every time I went down, every time I lost. You know, used to come home and I used to throw the comp cards out the window and cards with my pictures on it for the poker games and say, that's it. I'm not going down again. I'm not going to give them any of my money, you know. And that would last about a day. And then being by myself and I wasn't married, you know, anymore, you know, what is there to do on a weekend, you know, on an evening? So I would go back down to Atlantic City.
Yeah.
But again, I could never win. On the way home, I'd fall asleep a few times. Once I smashed up a car.
Did you? Wow.
You know, oh yeah, right. Police thought I was drunk, you know, but I think I was just tired, you know.
Unbelievable.
Things really got out of hand where I was just losing money that I didn't have. And from losing money that you didn't have and continuing wanting to play, I started writing bad checks from my bank account. I wrote a couple of bad checks from where I worked because the people at the bank knew me and would cash the check. And it got to the point where it would be a Thursday when I get paid and the money would be deposited in my account, and I would run to the bank at 9 o'clock in the morning to get the money out so I could go down to Atlantic City.
Mm-hmm.
At the time, I had like my own office for my company, so they really didn't know whether I was there or not there.
You know?
So I had all the time in the world. And I think not, you know, being busy enough and having all the time in the world made me go down even more, you know. And, of course, I was always chasing my money.
What do you mean by that?
Chasing my money is trying to get back the money that I lost,
okay.
You know, which you could never get back, you know. And it made no difference. As a compulsive gambler, there were times when I did have stacks and stacks and stacks of green, which were $25 chips, and black, which were $100 chips in front of me.
Mm-hmm.
And I could have walked away, and had thousands to go home with. But it was always, well, a little more, a little more, a little more.
Were you ever able to walk away with your winnings?
No.
No.
No, very rarely. Or once in a blue moon, I'd walk away with the money I came with, you know.
And oh, so the best you...
And consider that being a loser because I didn't win any money.
All right, so if you came out flat, that would be, you know, that would be ahead?
If I came out flat, that would be... ahead, yes.
Okay. All right, so that's the best you could hope for here.
Well, things got so worse, so bad, that in 2001, I just didn't know what to do anymore. I had owed 3 months, 2 months on my apartment that I was renting. My car, my SUV was ready to be repossessed. I had no money left. The bank was threatening to call the police, you know, if I didn't come up with the money, that I attempted suicide.
Oh, wow.
And I just found a bunch of pills that I had. I didn't even know what they were, and I just swallowed them all.
Oh, man.
And for like 3 days, I was just in a stupor. I guess God didn't want to take me right then.
Right.
And I couldn't even do that right, as I put it. And I just didn't know what to do, who to turn to. And I picked up the phone and I called my son. And I get very emotional when I talk about that. And I told my son, I remember, that I have to talk to you. And he said, well, what about Dad? And I said, you know, you just got to come down because I have to talk to you. And my son came down, and I told him what had happened. But as a gambler, you know, I was trying to borrow money from him. My son felt, and my daughter felt, you know, that, of course, wasn't the right thing to do. And between the two of them decided that I should maybe commit myself to a psych ward, which I did. I committed myself that next day and was there a week and then went into Gambling Anonymous from then.
Okay.
And in May of this year, I'll be celebrating 3 years of being clean.
Oh, that's fantastic.
And thank God to my son and my daughter and the Gamblers Anonymous program. You know, I've been clean since 2001 and
really?
Putting my life back together.
Wow, that's fantastic. Well, Jeff, thanks so much for sharing with us. We're going to hear from Mike in a little bit. I mean, I know it's emotional stuff to talk about, and we thank you for your honesty.
Thank you.
You are listening to America's 12-Step Radio Show. My name is Drew. This is Stepping Out. We just heard from Jeff, who is our next guest's father, and Jeff was telling us about how his addiction to gambling led him to an attempt on suicide, and one of the people that he reached out to in his most troubled moment was his son, and we have the benefit of speaking with Mike right now. Mike, you're a member of Gammonon, is that correct?
That's correct.
And that is the fellowship for family and another of, you know, why don't you tell us about Gammonon?
Gammonon is for family and friends.
Family and friends, okay.
Yes, of people with that are struggling with compulsive gambling.
Now, you just sat in the room and you listened to your dad give his whole story.
Yeah.
What does that feel like? I mean, to hear it from his perspective. I know you lived it.
Yeah.
But to hear it now.
I mean, it's very different to hear in his words what happened.
Okay.
Because I think that when he tells a story, it's different than how I tell the story, for obvious reasons. We're coming from two different sides of the fence. At this point, I've heard it so many times, but it's still refreshing to hear it again.
Could you tell your story? To
sure.
And somewhere, not tell his story, but tell your story,
okay,
in a way that kind of follows that chronology as you saw it.
Okay. I remember when my father talked a little bit about when he was gambling while he was still married to my mom.
Okay.
And, you know, I like most children, I have early childhood memories of him at baseball games and coaching basketball and very good memories. And I also have memories of trips to AC, so trips to Atlantic City.
Okay.
I remember going in and knowing the people who worked there.
Oh, really?
They knew me. I remember going into the game room and the people who were there to babysit the kids. I remember knowing them. So I do have some of those memories. But otherwise, I really didn't have any recollection of a gambling problem.
No, huh?
No. It was very normal childhood.
Hmm.
It wasn't until several years after my parents were divorced, when I first had an experience with him where compulsive gambling, even though at the time I didn't know that he was gambling, where it first kind of impacted our relationship.
Okay.
And this was probably a year before I found out. And I remember him and I were driving in a car to Long Island to visit some family. And he had said that he has something sensitive that he wanted to talk to me about, and had asked basically if he could borrow some money, because my sister, he promised my sister that he would pay for her education.
Okay.
And he didn't have enough to cover it, and he didn't want to go back on his promise. So he asked if he could borrow some money to help her with school.
Okay.
At that time, you know, of course.
Yeah.
Of course you can borrow money, whatever you need. So I gave him some money. It wasn't a lot, but I gave him some money to for my sister's education.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't find out until a year later, I guess, that was related to gambling.
Wow. What was it like when you found that out? Were you angry? Were you hurt? I mean...
Scared.
Scared.
I was scared. Yeah. He had called me up the day that I found out. He had called me up. This was Memorial Day weekend, and this was the day that he spoke about when he called me up. I was at home, and he called me up, and I just remember him crying, and he said, you know, can you come down? He was about an hour away. So I was like, yeah, of course. I got dressed and I drove down there, and you know, as soon as I got there, he was almost collapsed, and he was just so just crying, and I was scared. You know, he had kind of walked me through a little bit about, you know, what had happened, and that he had a compulsive that he had a gambling problem, and he's in a lot of trouble, and didn't really go into a lot of details. But like he said, at that point, he still wanted money. He still wanted to gamble. So one of the first things we discussed was, you know, well, he had told me that he tried to commit suicide. And, one of the first things that we discussed was that he was in trouble and needed to pay some people off, and, he needed money to do that. So, we talked once again about, how much money I need to give him to help him out.
Okay. Now, you were clear this is not a money problem. You were clear that this is a gambling problem. I mean, you knew that.
You know, at that point, I was ready to enable.
Okay.
I remember going on.
Did you not want to know that this was a gambling problem?
I mean, it was, I knew it was a problem. It was obvious, but I didn't know anything about compulsive gambling. So
wanted to fix your debt.
I just wanted to fix this problem. Yeah. What do I need to do to fix this problem? And like most people who don't know anything about it, our instinct is to help the person that you love. And you don't know, but you think that helping is to give them the money that they need.
Yeah.
You know, if someone is threatening to hurt you, you want them to stop. So you're going to, if you owe them money, you want to pay them the money.
So back to the question, you really thought this was a money problem, or wanted to think this was a money problem and not a gambling problem or something worse.
Right.
Right.
At least at that time, I was hoping to solve it then. You know, if we need whatever we need to cover right now, let's do that. And then maybe we can figure out what's going on here. But, you know, at that time, I just wanted to.
But this isn't the only incident where you put money at the problem and the money didn't solve the problem.
You know, this was the first time that I had known that it was a gambling problem, though.
Okay.
So the fact that I had given him money previously, it was, at that time, it wasn't an issue.
I gotcha. So, I mean, when you find out, what's on your mind with this? I mean, what are you thinking?
I remember.
You said you were scared.
I was. Oh, yeah. I mean, I was just scared he was going to hurt himself.
Okay.
He was very, very bad shape. He looked terrible. He looked like he hadn't slept in a while. He had told me that he tried to commit suicide. You know, he just didn't look right. So, I was very worried about his emotional health and his physical health. So I remember writing him a check for what he asked for, and then I left. I left his apartment for a little while. I was still scared to leave him there because I didn't at that point I didn't know what he was capable of. He wasn't himself, clearly. At that point, I went to 7-Eleven around the corner from his house, and I called my mom, actually. Because I know that she had some experience with him and gambling, and I called I called the hotline.
Okay, now where was your mom in all this? I know that they had split up at that time,
mm-hmm.
but I mean, was she? He had said earlier that she didn't know, and then she found out, and that was kind of the beginning of the end for the relationship.
Yeah.
What was the damage there, as you saw it?
I mean, miraculously, him and my mom have a great relationship.
Okay.
To this day, they still talk.
Okay.
You know, I wouldn't go as far as to call them. I mean, at that time, I wouldn't say that they were friends, but certainly that they called each other mm-hmm. And wish each other if there was holidays or if there was events.
They were cordial.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah.
But what, I mean, the damage, as you said, I mean, you're between the two of them. So, mm-hmm. I mean, what was that like for you?
I mean, it was just a relief to be able to share it with somebody.
Yeah.
At this point, I had been carrying this burden for quite some time on my own, and it was just a relief to be able to share it with somebody.
Okay. Okay. So what's next?
Well, at that point, I had cut him, I had wrote him a check, and, I had called my mom and called the hotline, and the advice that I got from the hotline was, well, my mom said, "I'm coming down." Her instinct was she was going to come down, and she obviously could do very little over the phone. The advice I got from the hotline was, you know, do not give him money.
Okay.
So at that point, I had to go back to where he was living and ask for the money back.
Okay.
And I remember saying to him, you know, explaining, "Listen, I'm going to need to get that check back." And he fought a little bit, but you know, he gave the check back. Maybe I was there for 5 hours. It was just him and I, and it was very uncomfortable. He was clearly worried about the situation, and I was still in almost shocked at what was happening. And my mom finally showed up.
Okay.
She showed up at his apartment. And as soon as she showed up, I think that was the moment at which point we were all willing to recognize that there was a problem.
Okay.
We made a few phone calls, and, the first thing we did was we went to a hospital, and, my dad checked himself in.
Okay.
He was in the hospital for a week. I didn't speak to him that week. That was actually the first time that we didn't speak to each other. I remember when my sister calling me and a week later and saying that they were letting him out, and I was just terrified, because at that point I was still so concerned that he was gonna hurt himself,
right,
that I was just hoping that I was trying to come up with reasons why they, you know, why they should keep him there.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I was asking my mom, is there anything we could say to them that might make them think that they need to keep him longer? But it was obvious that was not going to happen. So at that point, we turned to the next step, which was to get involved with GA and Gammonon.
Okay.
Well,
he had mentioned his story that he was to come into GA, and at that point, mm-hmm. he had stayed from that point.
Yeah.
What was there a suggestion, you know, from that fellowship that the family should get some help?
There was the suggestion from the Gammonon, or from the Gammonon GA room,
right?
You know, it would help us to be in that room. I mean, this was not, at this point, he was in GA, and you know, one of the first things that we learned in Gammonon was there's nothing that we can do to stop our loved ones from gambling.
Okay.
So it was suggested to me to get involved with Gammonon to learn about this problem. At this point, I had no idea what gambling was, what being a compulsive gambler meant.
How old were you when you walked into the room first?
I was 25.
Was it, were you unique in the sense that, was it mostly spouses in there, or was it?
It was mostly women.
It was mostly women.
And mostly spouses.
And mostly spouses.
Yes.
Okay, I'd imagine that was the case. So what was that like for you?
It was awkward.
Yeah.
I mean, generally, women like to talk more than men and like to share their feelings and their emotions.
Sure.
And being in that room, surrounded by people who wanted to share, was a little nerve-wracking.
Okay.
And I didn't, for the first three meetings, I didn't talk. At that point, my sister was with me. Mm-hmm. So she did all the talking, and I just kind of nodded. And I really did not feel comfortable being in that room, and I did not feel comfortable talking about the situation, partly because I didn't know how to really share with people I didn't know, mm-hmm. and partially because it was still so new and so fresh and still so devastating that it was just hard for me to talk about.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So how long were you in there before you were able to open up a little bit?
I mean, I'd say it took me about 6 months to really start to learn how to communicate what really was bothering me. It's easy to go in there and talk about your week and talk about the things that aren't, you know, really keeping you up at night. But once it was about 6 months before I really started to get the hang of sharing what was really bothering me, and it's still a struggle. I mean,
how long are you going now?
3 years.
That's amazing. 3 years. Now tell me, you know, you go through this process of, I guess, opening up a little bit. Did you have to get a sponsor? Did you? I mean, how do they guide you in there? What was the?
When you first get in there, it's people are just trying to get you to feel comfortable in the room. So, trying to use the phone as often as possible. People would call me up just to talk. When we weren't in meetings, people would call and see if they wanted to get together. And it was really just trying to get comfortable with different tools of the program.
Where do you believe the damage lies in you? What I mean by that is, what was the pain that prompted you to take action and go pursue this, other than the suggestion from Gamblers Anonymous? Obviously, were you having difficulty in other relationships in your life based on your relationship with your father?
No. I think that really what I found is that, first off, I started to see common themes of people who had experience with the compulsive gambler.
Like what?
And a lot of people, for example, a lot of the spouses of compulsive gamblers, a lot of people who are attracted to people with compulsive behaviors have very similar characteristics.
Okay.
Sometimes it can be low self-esteem or confidence. There's sometimes communication issues. And I was just very interested in learning about this.
Okay.
Not because I was experiencing them, but because it was helping me to understand the problem and understand its impact on people's lives. And the more I learned, the better off I felt that, first off, there's no guarantee that my father won't gamble again.
Right.
It's something that these guys really, really struggle with. And, you know, while they say take a day at a time, and while some of them are very successful in program, and, you know, he's been very successful there for 3 years, but it's a lifetime commitment, and mm-hmm. You know, there's always a risk that you can slip. So, you know, one of my motivations is to, if it happens again, I know how to handle the situation. That I'm not as scared and as I was.
Okay,
that I can manage it better. But you know, I'm confident and hopeful that we don't get there. That never happens, but there's other things in the program that you learn that are applicable in other relationships or other aspects of your life.
Like what?
Your ability to communicate with people. One of the things I'm working on right now is my patience. And
okay.
It started out with my patience with my father, and I felt that in certain situations I wasn't being fair to him, and I wasn't as patient with him as I was to other people. And as I learned to work with that and to be more patient with him, I found that I was also being more patient with my coworkers and more patient with problems with other family members.
Mm-hmm.
So that's something that I was able to learn in program and apply it to relationships outside of program.
Is there 12 steps in Gammonon?
Yeah, and the 12 steps in Gammonon are very, very similar to the 12 steps of GA.
So what do they tell you you're powerless over? That's over the gambler?
Yeah, where one of the first things you learn is that you're powerless over the gambler and over the gambling problem. And
okay.
That's probably one of the most difficult things to learn, because when most people enter the Gammonon room, their instinct is, okay, what do I need to do to solve this problem?
Right. Did you actually think that you were the cause of it?
No.
Okay.
No.
All right. So you didn't really get hung up on that?
No, no.
Okay. I just got the website fed to me for Gammonon. It's www.gam-anon.org. And Some of the stuff that's in here is, it's a fellowship of men and women who have been afflicted or affected by the gambling problem, and it's founded on spiritual principles. Try to find answers to questions like, what is my role as the spouse, parent, loved one, or compulsive gambler? How can I be of the greatest help to the person who joins GA? If my gambler continues to gamble, how can I live with this problem? And how can I learn to accept and understand God's will for me? How are you doing with that one today?
You know, we learn in that room to look to our higher power, and it doesn't necessarily define your higher power as God. Right. Some people can use the room as their higher power, but one of the things that you need to learn early in the program is to have faith in something that's bigger than yourself.
Okay.
So I'm doing pretty well with it. That's one of the things I'm working on. You know, I'm doing better with it than when I started.
And how are you guys both doing? I see your dad smiling away over there, so this is kind of cool. I mean, the relationship's solid now? Things are going well?
Yeah, I mean, it's certainly a lot different than it was 3 years ago.
That's awesome.
I think that we're communicating more, but it's not just that we're communicating more. It's also that it's what we're communicating. You know, we're able to share problems rather than talk about events that happened that day. And instead of I went shopping yesterday, here's
I got
what
you.
I bought. You know?
Mike, thanks so much. Jeff, thank you.
Sure.
Once again, you're listening to America's 12-Step Radio Show. This is Drew. My name is Drew, and this is Stepping Out.